Welcome to the Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church.
Well, welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of God now that I got all my buttons pushed and the board live. So anyway, we did a call-in show last week, and we did it concerning a document that was sent to us by somebody by the name of Stephen. And we addressed all the questions that we could find in the document. Evidently, some people still don't quite get it. We've received probably altogether about 50 pages of materials that we've had to read from this person who's not even a part of our network. But he's been, you know, kind of coming in and trying to, you know, he's been farming emails and trying to make contacts and trying to get people to follow him. And, you know, the typical stuff we see all the time, you know, they got a little tiny website somewhere with a document on it. And they're trying to make everybody come to them as some kind of guru. Now, I'm not a guru, although we have a lot more than a document. We have books and books of information. We have hundreds of audios and articles. And actually, I could do a lot more if we got a little bit more help. And we are getting some help from our ministers. But the way this works is that, you know, I can name you site after site and individual after individual. We actually even have a whole section on, you know, the gurus of freedom movement and of churches. And of course, you can see all the pastors that are out there that are living in million-dollar homes and tickling the ears of the people and telling them what they want to hear. We're not in that business of telling you what you want to hear. We're telling you what we see the truth as. You don't have to pay us $10 a month or $25 a month or a $1,500 fee or a $5,000 fee or a $10,000 fee, all of which I have seen people charge. You don't even have to buy our books. We have them free online. All that's available to you. But we have people who are going to always come around and say, you know, is this it? Should we do this? You know, this is better. Or I've been working on this forever, you know, 3 years, 5 years. Well, I've been working on it for half a century, and I'm not working alone. I got a lot of other people working with me. We present almost all of our material up front for free, but people just don't quite read it. they have difficulty connecting the dots or something, but it's really very simple. Early Israel was a network. Teutons were a network. Christianity was a network of people that had particular views and ideas about the weightier matters, law, judgment, mercy, and faith. And the early church, early Israel, were forms of government where the people bound themselves together by faith, hope, and charity in the perfect law of liberty, not by covenants, contracts, or constitution. You couldn't even have contracts. You were not to make covenants with other men who would be your ruling judges. It would be, you know, tell you what's right and wrong. You didn't give somebody else the power to decide right and wrong for you. And I don't have the power to decide right and wrong for you. I'm just presenting what we have discovered together, along with all the other people who actually do help instead of, you know, sit around and complain and whine or do nothing. And we have a lot of people who do nothing. And you always have that. And they can do nothing, but we're doers of the word. We're actually showing you, we're helping people, and we would help more people. But we actually had a complaint today with somebody who says, oh, you know, we were part of the network 10 years ago and you wouldn't believe the story of how much we went to bat for these individuals and tried to help them. And then, you know, they come back with this 10 years later. I mean, we didn't change our phone number. We didn't move. We're still promoting a network. This person doesn't have a minister. They didn't pick a minister. They're not in a congregation. They're not trying to help anybody else. I'm sure they're helping other people, and they're nice people, but I can't keep track of everybody who I've been in contact with over the last 40 years. It's just too many people, and I don't know why I should have to keep. I mean, this is why all these systems, what Christ did was a network. You know, some people say, well, I don't see anywhere where Jesus said that we were to order ourselves into the tens, fifties, hundreds, and thousands. And that they tell me that. And then I show them right away that's exactly what Jesus did before the loaves and fishes. He told everybody to set themselves down in 50s. Well, Israel had a tradition of gathering in tens. And like I say, the Romans, the Teutons, almost all these governments had this basic group of 10 in a congregation. You know, sometimes it was 12, but 10 was kind of a magic number that everybody kind of shot for. And that's been around long before we show in history. That was around way back in the days of Nimrod, and which is way before Israel. We know that is just the total history of early England, France, Germany. All these people organized themselves into this basic group of 10 families. And that is just throughout history everywhere. You can find that everywhere. They had specific names. I mean, still today, an elderman, you know, in modern government is from a alderman, which is in England, which was the head of 1,000. And then there was a hundredsman who was the head of 100s and a tithing man who is the head of 10. They weren't rulers necessarily. They became rulers over a period of time, but they were just, this is just common sense. You know, that, you know, Jesus didn't go through, you know, all the thing about your latrine and all that, washing your hands and all this kind of stuff. But all that stuff just makes good sense. This is common sense. He doesn't have, should he, does he have to go? If he doesn't say that, you don't do that. I mean, that's just, it's just basic. So, but he did say they had to sit down, set themselves down in 50s, or they weren't going to get any loaves and fishes. And this is part of the process. And we have clear evidence right away in the early church that they were organized in these tens. How do you think that Constantine knew that there were 1,200 known bishops at the time of Constantine? He knew about 1,200. There were probably more. But he had actually sent out invitations to 1,200 known bishops. And less than 300 were actually showing up to. They say there were 319 people showed up, but they weren't all bishops. What are these bishops? Bishop is the word episcopo for overseer. What is an overseer? Somebody who looks and watches over things. He doesn't rule over things. He watches over things. Why? Because he's part of the network. He's connecting all these 10 ministers with these 90 ministers over here. Because he's connected with 9 other episcopos, bishops. It's just a network. It has fundamental principles of Christ. Don't exercise authority one over the other. But you connect. So if you've been a widow for 10 years and you're not in a congregation, don't complain to us if nobody's there for you. I mean, this is the foolish virgins, you know, who don't gather. They forsake the gathering together. We've been there for I don't know how many people, but a lot of times we help people out and then they disappear. Because they don't really have Christ in them. They're not gathering together to help others. We even have people now gathering. They're arguing amongst themselves about petty things. And you'll get that. I mean, kids, brothers and sisters will argue as they grow up. But we put you in congregation. We don't put you. You have to set yourselves down into the tens and 50s and hundreds of thousands. And you are going to argue. Paul and Barnabas argued. But what's important? Are you also going to forgive? Because you're going to need forgiveness, so you better forgive. So you need to work these things out. This is how it works in the kingdom of God. You need to be forgiving and giving and charitable. Because that's how it works. That's just simple. And then all these guys come in and their documents, you know, is this it? Is this it? Is this it? Huge amount of time has been invested in responding to this guy. We've got one basic page on our website. And if you're in the network, and you can join the network by going to Preparing You, if you're in the network, you can just ask on that network where the page is. Everybody should know because it went out to the network. Then they can send you the link and you can take a look at it. If you're not online, you can get a hold of us and we'll try to get you connected with a local minister. Everybody can't connect with me, but you're connected with me if you connect with the local ministers. And then you connect with these congregations of record. And then you can be a part of the buddy systems times tens, 50s, hundreds, and thousands. Just like the early church, the English for almost 1,000 years were organized into the tens, hundreds, and thousands. And the Germans as well until King Stephen came up and de Bullion in France. And then they started crushing these outfits one after another. Why? Because they stopped caring about the others as much as they cared about themselves. Their valley was so comfortable. I mean, the kingdom of heaven works really good. But when you get too comfortable, you start thinking, well, we don't really need to care about the next valley. I mean, we're okay here. But now, you know, 90% of how people are taken care of is taken care of by the benefactors who exercise authority, yet they think that they're Christians. Their kids go to their schools, their grandparents, their parents and grandparents are taken care of by the government. They don't have to do any of that. The early church had to do all of that. Early Israel had to do all of that. They could no longer eat the leeks and onions and the straw benefits of Pharaoh. They had to provide for themselves day one. And they were ready because they'd gone through the famine and learned how to do this. You're going to go through the famine. Some of you may even make it to the other side of the famine. You might still be alive after it's all done and said. Many of you will not be alive. You'll be dead. And your children will be dead. And your grandchildren will be dead. And you will be no more heard in the land. And you'll whine and cry on your way to death, you know, that, you know, God, I believed in you. I didn't do what you said, but I believed in you. You're not a doer of the word, so you didn't really believe in him. And doer of the word evidently means that sometimes you have to stay up to 4 o'clock in the morning answering a stupid document. And I'm going to say stupid because Stephen Americo's document was stupid. Oh, how unchristian. Well, I could say he's a whited sepulcher, but he's not even a sepulcher and not very white. His document is all over the place. It is up on, it is a pedestal. He gets up there. I mean, even his footnotes contain this very thing that he's footnoting. It's not well footnoted. It's poorly footnoted. It is not on point, and it is describing something that we're not doing. Most of the problem with him is he doesn't know what we're doing. He's read something, developed a preconceived notion from what he read, was on the groups, could have asked the question, what do you mean by this? And we could have answered it right then. Somebody's complained that we haven't offered him dialogue. What do you think the groups are for? They're there for dialogue. You can dialogue, but not diatribes. Diatribes are not. What he did is didn't talk to anybody hardly for 2 years, except for people who are not a part of his holy church. And then he published his diatribe by sending it as an attachment. He had several other friends of his send it as attachments to other groups. But it's a diatribe, and that's not permitted on that group. If you want to go diatribe, you can go over to the debate group, the Yahoo groups, where all the other Yahoos hang out. Because that's not real. I mean, we have some people that might be in the network that are over there, but if you don't join a congregation, then you don't care about others. And he says he will never join a congregation because he doesn't want to fill out a declaration of sacred purpose, which is simply a receipt. For him. You say, I'm giving you this for Christ's purposes, and you give it to a minister of your choice, your election. And then he says, I will receive this, not for myself, but for Christ. And then they notify us that this is what they're doing, and we either recognize them or we don't. So where's the contract? The only one who's contracted to anybody is the minister has contracted with Christ because he says that I'm going to do this for the purposes of Christ. And we have been willing to recognize him because he says he's going to show us what he does. So that's the beginning of vetting. Because people said, well, is this, how do we know this minister is trained? Well, you don't know. You can ask him. You can talk to him. I don't know how you're going to make the decision that you trust him. That's between you and the Holy Spirit. I'm not interfering with that. But if you want me to recognize this as a part of the church, then I got to see what's going on. I mean, that's just common sense. It's not rocket science. It's common sense. So this is what we looked at his document and we found it wanting, severely wanting. But we still took the time to answer every question we could find. And we did it on the last show. Somebody else went over, took their spare time and went over his 9-page document. This was a 9-page. He's also given us 20-page documents. And we've already answered that on other shows. And we have the recordings up on his page that we have posted up there. But we went over every question. This independent party went through there and tried to find the questions and tried to type them out so you'd have them. I didn't see his questions ahead of time, although I knew what some of them were because knew I'd looked at the document and some of them were kind of obvious what the question was going to be, but I knew what the answer was. But I didn't know what order he was going to ask the questions. I just answered them. And they are answered. They may not be answered the way he wants, but they are answered and responded to. Now we've given the opportunity of everybody in the network, if you have a question you feel is not answered, let's put it to the network and I will see it. Or our minister will bring it to my attention. And it's how the kingdom works. This is what this is, keys of the kingdom. This is what it's all about. We're trying to figure out in history and how history would apply to us. If you don't learn from history, you're doomed to repeat the same mistakes. Israel was a government without rulers. The Levites were not rulers. They did not force taxation. You tithe to them according to their service. That's what it says. That way they could take time out of their day to actually help network an entire nation together so that if the whole nation was attacked or if there was earthquake, fire, flood, or whatever, or famine, you could help one another out and survive. This is very important in a world full of crazy people. I mean, even some of these Muslim communities that people are afraid to go into, you go into them and you're walking down the street and you're not dressed like a Muslim, you don't look like a Muslim. They're all on their phones texting each other and they're putting together a crowd to watch you or maybe even to beat you up or run you out because they're organized. You know, that's one thing, the enemy gets organized. You guys are floating all over the place. You're not organized. You don't care about one another. You care about your belief, what you think God wants. God wants you to love one another, care about one another, and tend to the weightier matters. You know, he just did not take the time in those years to talk to people who actually know what we're doing. He assumed he knew what we were doing based on his interpretation. And you read his document, we know he didn't know. And he makes it sound to somebody who doesn't really understand the complexities of government and laws today, he makes it sound like he actually knows what he's talking about. But you have to be ignorant of how things work. We have spent I myself have spent a half a century. Together, if you take all the guys that have worked on this and read, I was just looking at just the emails back and forth to ministers and to different groups. Because of his one document would amount to thousands of words, hundreds of emails have gone back and forth and people have read it and taken out their time. And what has he done? Nothing. Produced nothing. Now, we gave him last week a chance, he's not in the network, so all I could do is send an email to the network telling them that we were going to have this call. It was going to be a call-in program. And we scheduled an extra half hour and we had it. He didn't show up. We had somebody monitoring the board, so if they called in, he could ask a question, and they would know it was him who called in. But we didn't see him call in. We saw people calling in, but they didn't want to ask a question. They were just listening. I see now the board is not really lighting up with a lot of people because all their questions have been answered. I sent out an email just before the show began, and to somebody who thought we didn't answer all the questions. And of course, I had just sent an email to him about a half hour, 45 minutes before. What is the question that was not answered? He says, I don't recall seeing a public response from anybody to somebody else who asked the question. And they were asked, but we went through that in the show. That was the public response. We have 5,000 words explanation. And one of the things she said in her little document, which she talks about pure religion, she doesn't even understand what pure religion is, to tell you the truth. I mean, she says she does, and she probably could recite back, taking care of the widows and orphans. But you don't take care of the widows and orphans by, driving down to the end of the road and just taking care of a few people you know. You couldn't do that. You got whole cities that have been bombed in different parts of the world. You'll have whole cities that are devastated by earthquakes. We've seen wars ravaging certain areas where people have to flee over the mountains to the other side and come down the other side. Well, in the days of the early church, you had to know who the Christians were in the next valley. If you were going to go over the mountain to the next valley because you had to flee from your valley, you needed to know who the Christians were in the next valley so that they could bring you into shelter and help feed you. And they had to know who you were to know that they should take you in, because a lot of people, we've seen this for years, a lot of people come around and say they're Christians. They're not Christians. Oh, they can quote the Bible and stuff, but they're not Christians. They're not doers of the word. So how do you know they're doers of the word? Because they network together. They care about the next valley as much as they care about their valley. They care about the next congregation as much as they care about their congregation. So they network together. In order to do this, men have to take out whole days of their time and to evangelize. Whole days, whole weeks, whole months, whole years of their time to go out and help bring people together. Well, how do they live while they're doing that? They're not taking care of their home. They're not taking care of their family because they're running around. I've traveled all over the country, put tens of thousands of miles in. Spend thousands of hours every year on this. I don't even get a month's worth of salary that many preachers get in donations. People, you know, most of what we operate on is what we produce. The few ministers that are actually working on this, we produce what is supporting us. We're not supported by congregational donations. It just isn't happening. Because one of the things that this one individual brought up and says, oh, you don't have to tithe unless it comes from, you know, tithing was always animals, you know, like sheep or cows or products from the ground. And we address that in pages, which I sent to this other lady who said she didn't see where we answered it. There they are. They're in those pages. Did she read them before she responded? I don't think so, because they're addressed right in there, what they say. We don't always say, you know, so-and-so say. I'm not mentioning names because I don't want to embarrass them. If you're a potter and you make pots, you know, and plates and bowls and all that stuff, and that's what you do for a living, according to her, you don't have to tithe. Because you don't produce sheep, you don't produce vegetables, you don't produce grains. And the tithing was only those things. But the fact is, you show me what year you worked in that you did not eat meat, grain, vegetables, or fruits while you were making pots. For the whole year, you didn't eat any of those things. You consumed nothing from the earth. And you made $10,000 in pots. But you don't have to tithe because you didn't get anything from the earth, except for the clay actually came from the earth. So I don't know. Maybe that counts too. The point is that anybody who thinks that way have to be looking for an excuse not to support ministers who are out there working every day. They have to be looking for an excuse not to support people that are actually doing what Paul and Barnabas and Peter the other apostles were doing. They're looking for an excuse. I don't have to give to them because I don't raise sheep and cows and grain. So I don't have to give to them because that tithing was only that. And that's not what tithing was at all. And it certainly was not only that. And we show in well footnoted articles, detail, looking into the language, looking into the history of the time. But even if we weren't so meticulous about that, common sense should tell you that the sacrifices on altars was not about killing sheep, setting them on a pile of stones, and burning them up. It isn't about that. And knowing when to have the feast isn't about counting moons and days. It's about gathering together in the Spirit of God for love of one another. That was probably a Feast of Tabernacles where Jesus made the people sit down in 50s before they could get the loaves and fishes. That's the way it worked. And then we, you know, in the same articles, which I could probably come up with, if I look here, them. Okay, yeah, here we go. Or early church. We have a whole article on early church tithing and contributions. And Corbin. Corbin was actually in, we show in, you know, I'm not sure exactly where it is, probably in the Corbin article, we show that Corbin was a social welfare system. And it means sacrifice. And they actually took the money that you sacrificed and they put it into a treasury. Money, by the way, not sheep, cows and vegetables, but money. They put it in the treasury. in the form of silver, which it tells you in the Bible you can do. I mean, even if you lived far away, I mean, you certainly could bring sheep, because the Levites had land to raise sheep on, but you didn't have to. You could sell them and turn them into money and bring it in that way, because it was a long ways off, and it was practical. That's all they're saying. It's practical. It's not convenient. So you could bring it in money, and there in Jerusalem, they had money. They had 30 pieces of silver that they could put somewhere. They wanted to put it in the Corban. And they wondered, is it lawful to put it in the Corban? Well, you know, but it doesn't say Corban when you read the Bible. It says it in the Greek, but they just translate Corban as treasury there. So the Corban was not only sacrifice, but it also be known as treasury. First century church, second century church, third century church, fourth century church, fifth century church constantly refer to the poor box as the Corbanos. I didn't make it up. We even got pictures of ancient Corbanuses, poor boxes, that were in churches that were there because that's where the donations went to take care of the needy. The tithing was called tithing because it came from the tens, and it came to help the Levites. And they could eat of all the sacrifice. They could eat of the free will offerings. They could eat of the peace offerings. They could eat of, because that was their job. Now, if they consumed it all up and sat around and got to be hundreds of pounds and didn't, you know, weren't actually doing the work, nobody would give to them anymore. But if they were actually doing the work, the power was in the hands of the people. They held it. They were the treasure. This is what it means to not put your treasure in Corbanos boxes, although it may filter through there. But it was, and then those, you know, those little boxes might be a shoebox in your local congregation, your local house church. But what he receives, he pays out to the needs of the people. But then he pays some to his overseer who will help support his work to keep all the other nine ministers. He's in a congregation of ministers. His congregation is not the people. Very simple stuff. Very fundamental stuff. And we answer all that. Some of the other things that we were answering was how the treasury works. It's all on our tithing page. Nobody's forcing this. She had a question about, she didn't see anywhere where the Levites, the job of the Levites was passed to the first century church. Yet the first guy to translate the Bible into Latin, named Jerome, he says, bishops, presbyters, deacons occupy in the church the same position as those which were occupied by Aaron, his sons, and the Levites in the temple. And we have other quotes from other people who say the exact same thing. You know, Clements of Rome. We even actually go into some of the Hebrew text that refers to this idea. And Jesus himself said, I'm going to take the kingdom away from you to the Pharisees, and I'm going to appoint it to somebody else who would bear fruit. Then we see him say, I'm going to appoint the kingdom to my little flock. It would be his pleasure to do it. And then we see him say, I appoint unto you the kingdom, but you're not to be like the kingdoms of the Gentiles who exercise authority one over the other. Where does he say, but I'm going to discontinue the existence of the Levites? There's nothing in there that even slightly suggests that. He's not going to make some new kind of wine. He's going to make wine and put it into new wineskins. But he's simply taking the job away from them because they're not bearing fruit. He's going to give it to another group that will bear fruit. And the people who think that, oh, that's not the case, we can keep, you know, doing all these other things, but we don't have to have that. It's ridiculous. And then they bring up Melchizedek, and we address Melchizedek. We actually had already done that in a whole page on Melchizedek. Melchizedek was involved with tithing. We see Abraham tithing to him. We actually see even before, we see later on, Jacob, it talks about tithing. What the heck? What, all these people talking about tithing, and it's before Moses. And it's in the days of Melchizedek, and just after Melchizedek. So if we're going back to the order of Melchizedek, where does tithing go away? Now again, we don't force tithing like the governments of the world. We're not in that kind of a business. We still see it as part of those free will offerings, that charity that Christ talked about, that the Old Testament talks about. That's what we see it as. So anyway, it's up to everybody to figure all that out, and that's what we are showing people all the time. But if they don't want to see it, there's not too much I can do about that. But we have addressed every question I could find. And if they have more questions, they need to bring them up. We're going to take a little break here, and then I'll be right back. And during the break, I'll go look and see if I got any emails. Maybe somebody actually did come up with a question. Who knows? Well, we'll be right back. I did see an email coming in from somebody. People have a hard time, and I'm looking here at what I'm trying to talk with you, but people have a hard time, like I say, putting and connecting the dots together. They all get emotional. One of the things I could talk about that, besides which we explained over and over again, that the documentation of somebody giving something to the church, and we have a record that it came from them because they said it's coming from them. We have a record of somebody receiving it because we have a record of them saying they received it for the purposes of Christ. And then we have an ongoing relationship with them so that we can see how they use it. So that we can testify for you that you are a church or part of a church and using that. Now, you don't have to come to us and do that. You could go to all kinds of people and do that. You could go to a seminary for 4 years and some church might let you set up a church or something. You could actually set up your own church and fill out a 1023 and send it to the IRS. And the IRS will send you a determination letter and say that you're a church. And you can do that. Now, they have certain things that they require when you do that. And we have certain things that we require when we do that. And we require that you let us know what's going on. Who's in your congregation? Who are you helping? What are you doing with what you receive? And we have to develop a relationship. During that process, we find out whether or not we can walk together with you. Anytime we see you doing something that we don't think is appropriate, we will unrecognize you as a minister. Now, we may give you time to do it, and it's all explained in the administrative guidelines that we have to, you know, notify you and talk with you. And of course, we follow, you know, Matthew 18 principles of going to you one-on-one, then going to you with other people. And this is when you're within the church. And so we try to tend to those weightier matters of law, judgment, mercy, and faith. We have a lot of records showing that that's the way we do things. But the IRS can also disallow you, and then they can confiscate your church and put you in jail, and they can do all kinds of things. Usually they don't put you in jail, but they will confiscate your church. Somebody was asking us the other day, can you deduct contributions to his church? And there's a long ways which they went around the question, but eventually that's basically the question. Well, according to what we've read in the IRS manuals, in the codes, and we quote that in the Body of Christ versus the Body of the State, we quote it in the Free Church Report, that you can. Any donation to a church is deductible. You have to be able to prove that you donated it. You can't just say, well, yeah, when the basket came around, I put in $100. You have to have a way of proving it. Again, that goes back to that receipt record. And you also, the IRS commonly says that they also want a statement from the church that the church has received your donation. Not that you just wrote a check, but they actually received it for the purposes of the church, whatever those are, which according to the definition in Black's Law Dictionary, it's for the purposes of Christ. So if you want us to send you a statement that says that you gave so much, which you can use to deduct, we have to know what you gave. And so we keep records. And that's what we do. Now, we don't keep those records so that you can deduct it from your taxes with the IRS, but we don't mind if you do that. That's your choice. We don't give you legal advice on how to file your taxes or any of that stuff. We don't know anything about that. But it was interesting that when this topic came up, somebody, their accountant, was saying, no, you have to be this. And now their accountant evidently is also a lawyer, but I can bring you lawyers that will tell you that you don't, you know, that, well, you can deduct it, that it's legal to deduct it from a church that has not filed a 1023. And we can also show you in the literature that all churches are considered 501c3, even if they don't file. I mean, that's a statement they make. So if they're considered 501c3 and you receive a donation from them, where do they say that only churches, you can only deduct donations to churches that have filed a 1023? You won't find that. You will find that it has to be churches that qualified to the restrictions of 501c3. What are those restrictions? Well, there aren't any real restrictions because they're not compelled to file, so that's not a restriction. What they're compelled to do is be a church. But the IRS does not define what a church is. They have 14 guidelines as to what they think a church would look like, and they don't require that churches meet all 14 guidelines. Those guidelines are not written for the church. Those are written for IRS agents. And so we looked at those guidelines. We had attorneys. We don't have any attorneys that we're clients of, but we had attorneys take a look at those and take a look at what we're doing, take a look at the Free Church Report, and they thought we were in compliance. Now, does the IRS think we're in compliance? I don't know. I haven't applied to the IRS to establish us as a church. that we're not required to. The IRS says we're not required to. Jesus certainly didn't say we were required to. He didn't say to the apostles, go out there and apply to Caesar. And if Caesar says you can be a church, you can be a church. No, the church is established by Jesus Christ. That's the definition. You don't have to reestablish it by anybody else. You just have to be a doer of the word. And so, of course, that's what we focus on, is being that doer of the word. So what we, I was looking here to see if we had, go read our article on tithes and tithing, and you will see some of the answers to the questions that were brought up. And it's very clear that the early church was receiving tithes of the people. They didn't always call them tithes, but then again, in the Old Testament, they didn't call free will offerings charity. But what is charity but a free will offering? So, you know, it's the same thing. They just go by different words, but it's the same thing. And no, it wasn't just sheep, but it wasn't just sheep in the Old Testament. They said they could turn them into money and turn that in. And the fact is that if you're eating sheep that came from the ground and eating grain that came from the ground and eating fruits and vegetables that came from the ground, and while you're eating and consuming all these things from the earth, you're making pots and doing labor and mowing lawns, then all the money you get from doing that, a percentage of that would be your tithing. It's just common sense. You came from the earth. The food you eat came from the earth. Unless you're eating artificial food, it certainly came from the earth. And you produced this much with those things of the earth that you obtained. And so therefore, yeah, you do have an obligation. But that obligation is between you and God. It's not, you don't have an obligation to me. I have no contract with you. You don't have to send anything to me. And besides, I'm always telling you to get into a congregation and send it to your local congregation. And then maybe it'll trickle up to me. See, we're a trickle-up economy. And I can guarantee you it trickles. But, I mean, there are people who contribute. But, I mean, it's amazing. It's like pulling teeth to get people to be like the early church. And we have in our article, Early Church and Tithing, which I just quoted a little bit from. I also quoted from some of the early, we have a deal there, Seeds of Righteousness, and that will go into this whole issue of whether or not the tithing was. And if you read that and you find something missing, you let me know and we will actually put it together. Actually, I can see that we didn't quite finish. We have some more to do there, but a lot of it is in there. Let's see. I see. It is. It's just a quote that I need to go in and put another little code thing on. But the other thing that we were talking about is this 501c3, and that's a big deal to other people. I'd also encourage you to go see our roadmap article. If you're on the network, you should have already received these things. And it's telling you what's going on behind the scenes. Everybody sees things going on in the world today. But they need to go and see what's going on behind the scenes. And I thought I would find this article. I was trying to remember the name of a particular case that somebody brought up. And the internet's just not working here. That's the problem. So I'll have to do this all from memory. The case that the individual quoted from, you know, and I'm familiar with the case. I'm not only familiar with the case, I'm familiar with the case before the case became a case, which was Indianapolis Baptist Temple. I've written an article on Indianapolis Baptist Temple. And they were a church that suddenly discovered that they could not speak about candidates and political policies without losing their 501c3 status. And they were a wealthy church. I mean, they had over millions of dollars worth of property. And, they did a lot for this. They had schools and they were preaching that people should be independent of the system and not be going and getting the benefits all the time. And we've talked about them before. I know the pastor emeritus. I've talked to the pastor there. I've talked to the parishioners there. I probably even talked to the guy whose case was mentioned. But I've met so many people, I can't remember them all. But they realized that incorporating the church was a mistake, because the church is supposed to be the corporation of Christ. To incorporate the church to the state, all other previous incorporation becomes null and void. Well, if the church is incorporated by Christ and you go incorporated by the state, you're now gone under the authority of the state and you're no longer under the authority of Christ. The church was always to be separate from the state, separate from the people. It was to be the servants of the people. Very clear. Not in the world, but not of the world. Well, once you incorporate, you're of the world. Because the word world there means constitutional order or system of government. So when you incorporate, you become of that world. So they had done that. They had incorporated. They realized that was a mistake. They had filed a 1023 with the IRS to establish them as a church. They realized that was a mistake. And I can show you all kinds of lawyers who are brilliant lawyers who say the same thing. And they wanted to undo that. And the way they undid that was they unincorporated. Well, you can't really unincorporate. But they kind of unincorporated and became this unincorporated association. Well, in the law, an unincorporated association is considered the same thing as a corporation. So they realized that, and they tried to morph into being not even an unincorporated association. And they did some stuff that makes sense, but they didn't do it all the way. Some of the people that were supposed to do it lied about what they were doing, so they were deceiving the pastor emeritus. And he was doing some things right. And they were trying to figure out. I'm not picking on him. But when I came there, and that's a mystical moment of how I showed up even, how I ended up speaking there, first one to speak at one of their engagements, and ended up having the pastor come to me and bring their paperwork and bring their court case and the judgment of the judge from federal court and ask my opinion. I just read the first few lines, and the article goes into this in more detail. ibt@hisholychurch.org. Look for that article. That the judge was actually telling them what they did wrong. And I'm looking here at the time. I really don't have time. You can probably find recordings on this if you go to Preparing You and search around. You read the article, join the network, and ask a question, and I can probably find it for you and describe it. But they applied to the IRS to establish them as a church for the purposes of a tax deduction from its parishioners. They didn't have to do it. Right in the form, it says churches do not have to file this form. because they can't require a church to file the form. They can't make them because the church is separate, and they know that. And part of that is because of 508C1, which is not, it's a U.S. code, but that's not put in there because the people who write codes love the church. They put it in there because somebody else is orchestrating that. And you're not a 508 church. It's just that you don't have to file. It's not, I always hate it. And even in that case, that particular case that he quotes, and I can't remember the name of, you know, actually, no, I don't think I have it. But anyway, Taylor or something or other his name was. But in that case, they talk about that idea. And but you have to know what you're reading. I mean, you have to have a background. It's like, this is why we always tell you about history, is that you need to know, you know, you can't understand the Bible without the Holy Spirit, but you can't even intellectually decipher it unless you understand the times that it was written in. And you really ought to read it in the Greek, but I mean, how many people have time to go and learn Greek? How many people have time to go and learn Hebrew? So that's why when you look in our footnotes, you'll find not only the Hebrew words, but the Hebrew letters. And then we explain, you know, I mean, there's a lot to it. There's a lot of evidence to what we're saying. But we're not trying to brainwash you with evidence. That's tree of knowledge stuff. Ultimately, you have to decide whether you want to come together like Christ came to save you. Do you want to come together to save others? You older people should be thinking about saving the next generation. Whether it's your children, your grandchildren, or whoever it is, you should be giving and tithing to save the next generation, because you're losing the next generation. They can't see it. Half the people in this country, more than half, are socialists. You cannot be a socialist without coveting your neighbor's goods. You just cannot be a socialist without coveting your neighbor's goods, because that's what socialism is. Nobody becomes a socialist because they want to give up their labor and they want to give up what they produce. They become a socialist so that other people will have to give up what they produce so that they are okay. You know, it's the one purse that they talk about in the Bible. Those who say, let's gather together and all have one purse. That's socialism. Lurk privately, it says, secretly, for blood. For whose blood? The blood of the guys who really work hard to make sure that if you don't work hard, you still get a reward. Guarantee. Entitlements. Whether it's socialism, communism, whatever. That's one person. It runs towards death. That's what the Bible is telling you. You sit and eat with a ruler and be a man of appetite, put a knife to your throat because he serves deceitful meat. If you become accustomed to living at the expense of your neighbor, you're going to turn into a savage and a beast. You're going to be biting one another. What do we see in the streets? These people rioting, hitting people, hitting girls, hitting people with sticks, pounding on them, smashing windows. These are socialists, communists. Now, do we hate communists? No. We need to purge our own hearts of that. And the way to do that is to start seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And the way that the early church did that is they sat down in tens, fifties, and then eventually hundreds, and then thousands. 2,000 one day, 3,000 the next. What are they talking about? They're talking about people coming together and organizing themselves to take care of the needy of their society through faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty. We're just showing you how to do that legally in this world, in Australia, Canada, United States, and many other countries that have similar laws, United Kingdom. And the truth is, you can even go into France, Belgium, Sweden, Norway, you can see the same thing. It's great that families start taking care of one another. I heard a story of a family where a family member needed some financial help, and they all got together. And they came up with the money. They were going to go into, they have a family trust savings. They were going to go into that. But they said, wait a minute, we can just do this out of our own pockets. And they did it out of their own pockets. Good start. But it's only a start. Now, when you start doing that, connecting yourself voluntarily, gathering together, connecting yourself with 9 other families. And those families pick a minister. And he gathers with 9 other ministers. And, you know, those ministers are serving 10 families. Now you've got tens, fifties, hundreds, and thousands. Fifties is just, you know, two halves of, you know, 100. That's all it is. You know, it's a sub breakdown of what I call the buddy system times 10. Everybody in your congregation is going to look out for everybody else in the congregation. Everybody doesn't have to get up every morning and count to 10. You know, everybody has a large family. You go somewhere, in a store or down the street or anything. I actually took my cousins. I went with my cousins. I wasn't driving or anything. I mean, I was probably 18 at the time, to Tijuana with my uncle and aunt. And I was kind of there to kind of go along, but I think I was kind of built-in babysitter to some degree, and that was okay. But I don't know how many times I counted to 8 that day. But it's the same way when I started having my own family. I used to count, you know, well, we got them all. Yeah, I got them all. In a buddy system times 10, you just have to keep your eye on the minister, and he keeps his eye on the other 10. But what helps him keep an eye on the other 10 is those 10 keep an eye on the minister. In other words, they keep the lines of communications open. And we have people, you know, gone for 10 years, haven't talked to any minister, not a part of any congregation. They wonder why we're not helping them. We don't even know what they're doing. They didn't care. The reason you keep your eye on the minister is because you care about the other 9. And he's going to give you a heads up if the anybody in the other 9 have a problem. And he's going to know they have a problem because suddenly they're not going to be connecting with him. Where were you? I didn't see you. I didn't hear from you. It's that simple. I always remember this last story. I'm almost out of time here. I was working with a guy who's a very quiet guy, hardworking guy. He looked like John Wayne. He's a cowboy, rancher, everything else. The first time my son saw him, my son was probably about 7, 8 years old, and he saw him walking down out of the hills, and we were waiting. We were going to have a meetup, and I was sitting in a pickup, and he saw him coming, and he says, Dad, John Wayne's coming. Because he looked like that. But anyway, he's very quiet. Tall, big guy, and very quiet. And I was picking a beam up with him, and we were going to try to get it up and put it, I don't remember where we were putting it, but anyway, somehow or other, I was looking one way, and he was looking kind of towards me, and he saw that the back of the beam was getting tangled in something behind me. And I couldn't see it because it's the other way, and it was everything we could do just to pick this up between the two of us. And, I mean, it's a 20-foot-long beam. And I knew it was getting tangled because I looked into his eyes, and I saw his eyes kind of looking over my shoulder at something and kind of getting wider and wider. And so then I partially glanced back, and then I had to give him a hard time. I says, "You're going to have to speak up. I can't just read your eyes." He smiled because he just was a quiet guy. But this is what you develop with your ministers, is this: you get to know each other. And if you don't, then I can't help you, because you're not seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness. And that's all there is to it. So anyway, I'm supposed to sign off the show at the end of the 90 minutes, but things are not really working. So I don't know if it's going to happen, but I'll give it a shot here, and we'll see if we can get into the outro. And until then, peace on your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.